major political parties.
We find that a majority of people actually believe it exists in government. 27% say it definitely exists, and another 47% say that probably exists in government.
I'm John Clemens.
The Federal Trade Commission says it will investigate Facebook as the social network faces a storm of criticism over compromised user information. The non-public investigation will focus on Facebook's privacy practices, according to the FTC's acting director. It says news data from 50 million Facebook users was inappropriately used by the political consultancy firm Cambridge Analytica. Reports say the FTC could fine Facebook billions of dollars if it finds the company violated the privacy practices agreement it reached with federal regulators in 2011. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has apologized for the breach. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Weather this afternoon, sunny with a high near 46. East wind 8 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low around 26. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 47. Light and variable wind becoming east around 6 miles per hour in the morning. Tuesday night, a chance of rain after 9 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 34. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday, a chance of rain. Cloudy with a high near 50. Calm wind becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday night, a chance of rain, mainly before 3 a.m. Areas of fog after 1 a.m. Otherwise cloudy with a low around 41. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than an tenth of an inch possible.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff, work out of our houses, all that good stuff. And what we try to do is we try to help people who have either someone in their family who has a mental health issue or someone they work with or friends with or next-door neighbor or the person themselves who may have a mental health issue, and we try to get them the help they need and the support, and because it's you're not alone. You know, there's a lot of us out there that can help you. And we do this in various ways. We have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course, and it goes over medications, side effects of the medications, what to do, what not to do in certain circumstances, what to say, what not to say, and it tries to get the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We also run a support group that's the third Thursday of every month, and it's at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, and it runs from 7 to approximately 8:30, 9 o'clock. You don't have to register for the support group, but you do have to register for the classes, any class that we teach. But everything is free. You get the binders, the papers, all that for free. But you just have to register because the classes, we can only have so many in a class. If you have any questions or need some more information, you can reach out to us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have a lady that mans it or checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you. Today we are very privileged to have with us, I'm going to murder your first name, Doctor.
We forgot to check.
Is it Guhandeep?
Gagandeep.
Gagandeep, okay. Yeah. Dr. Gagandeep Singh, who is an owner and the executive director of the Center of Wellness, or for Wellness.
Yeah.
And in short, the goal of the center is to be a premier provider of substance abuse and mental health treatment services on an intensive outpatient basis. Thank you, Doctor, for taking the time to come here. I know that you have a busy schedule, and it's not easy to come from, you know, is it Madison?
Or Monroe.
Monroe. I knew it began with an M.
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close. Would you tell us what the center does and who does it serve?
Sure. So first of all, I want to thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to see both of you once again and to be able to speak a little bit about this topic. As you were speaking to what NAMI does as a whole, I've seen that firsthand throughout my medical school and residency training and fellowship and now in practice as well, the amount of support and education and advocacy it provides for those that are suffering with mental health issues. So I just wanted to say thank you for giving us the opportunity to come on board. The Center for Wellness was founded by myself a few years ago now. I think in the middle of 14 or towards the end of 14, we actually opened the doors. And initially, the licensure that we had received through the state was for the Substance Abuse Intensive Outpatient Program, which had been the focus. But my dream had always been to kind of cultivate that into the mental health and dual diagnosis tracks. And we are pleased that now we have, over the course of since our last conversation, been able to launch those programs, and we have teen intensive outpatient and adult intensive outpatient programs running, and we're available to start partial care as well. And I can go into a little bit about what those different levels of care mean. But really, I had worked in inpatient facilities, outpatient facilities, private practice throughout my career. And then in the outpatient realm, I saw these partial care or partial hospitalization programs, as they're called, as well as intensive outpatient, which is essentially a step down from a hospital stay. And I saw the benefit that that was providing to those folks that were attending those programs. And, you know, I felt like the clinical side and the administrative side sometimes would butt heads a little and felt, felt that it was better to maybe separate myself from that current position or a couple of different positions I had, and try to launch our own center where we're focused on the ethical, you know, patient-focused treatment. You know, it is, we have to keep the lights on. There is a, you know, a quote-unquote business side to it, but being the owner and executive director and being a psychiatrist first and foremost, my background is being as a psychiatrist, as a board-certified child adolescent psychiatrist and adult psychiatrist. So that's what I do day in, day out. I see patients. That's what I'm doing this for. So we'd like to be solvent and profitable and all that good stuff, but at the end of the day, we're putting the patients first, and that's the goal.
Right.
So we do try to do what we think is best for the patient clinically, and you know, we've got great staff that are on board, and we're growing a little bit, and that's what we're excited about, because we want to take that next step and start offering the partial care program, which the license we've had for, but we were expanding carefully and not kind of getting too far ahead of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But we feel it's time now to offer the partial care programming and are open to assessments and referrals for that at the moment. So that's what the Center for Wellness is about. We're in Monroe Township in Middlesex County, so about 50 minutes from here. There's not really a driving path here that's as the crow flies.
So
it's,
no.
It's kind of windy, but it would be a little bit shorter for the straight shot. But it's about 50 minutes driving from here in Flemington, right in this spot. And we, you know, we work with private insurance. A question folks often ask, which unfortunately I have to say no, is that we are not a Medicare or Medicaid provider at this time. That may change in due time, but we're primary private insurance in network with Horizon and Cigna, United, which is the Oxford and Optum family.
Right.
And we are looking at getting in network with other insurers as well and use out-of-network benefits where necessary. So the goal is to get folks in, have them get that intensive experience that outpatient typically cannot provide on a one-on-one, because it's primarily group therapy, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but I can answer any questions about the actual logistics of the program.
Yeah, I would like to know the difference between partial care and the intensive outpatient that you have right now. What is the difference?
That's a great question. So partial care, by state regulatory standards, is for adults, it's technically anywhere above 9 hours, but I think the official cutoff is 25 hours of treatment is really what's recommended and required. So that would be Monday through Friday, running 5 hours plus a half hour for a lunch break in there, that patients would be coming in. So I kind of simplify it to saying it's kind of like going to school to learn about mental health, to learn about what your symptoms might be, to learn coping skills and process and get individual sessions as well. The primary overlap between both of those types of treatment paradigms is that it's primary group phase focused. So you're in a session with a small group of other individuals who are going through similar situations with a therapist who's running the group and helping you to, again, cultivate your knowledge about what you're going through and work on improving those symptoms. And then you also have individual sessions, and then you see a psychiatrist in addition to all of that within those 25 hours a week. That's partial care. The individual sessions, I believe, I'll check the regs, but I'm pretty sure it's a weekly individual with a therapist and a weekly visit with a psychiatrist, all in partial care. So it's not quite as intensive as a hospital, but quite a bit intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Intensive outpatient takes it down a couple notches, one notch in terms of treatment, but in terms of practicality, you're going down to 9 hours of treatment a week. So right now we have folks coming in 3 days a week, 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, and that's their day. So the partial care folks would stay on past 1, have a lunch break, and then have a couple of groups afterwards. Right. That would be the plan. So the 3 days a week is the intensive outpatient IOP. They see me as a psychiatrist every 2 weeks. They'll see the therapist at least once a month per regulatory standards, but we try to do more often. And in both cases, we offer family therapy as well. So we do a family therapy session, or at least offer it. The patient is, of course, able to refuse if they don't feel that'll be helpful. But oftentimes, we think family involvement is going to be beneficial. So we offer that as part of the treatment paradigm as well.
We met, I believe it was at a NAMI conference, wasn't it, a few years back?
I believe so.
And there was a young lady that was with you.
Lori, I think.
Is she still there?
Lori right now is doing more outpatient work for us. She's had to step back a little bit from the director role. We have another director right now, and we're going through some transition, but I think we have a good team that has experience in the partial care IOP world. And at one point, and perhaps when we met, we were doing more of this. We were offering some outpatient, individualized outpatient treatment as well, which is something I'd like to return to, especially for folks who are stepping down from our more intensive programs. Mm-hmm. And we are getting calls from outpatients wanting to come in. But as we are just kind of ramping up the staff and looking at the program needs, we may not have out kind of cold calls. We may not be able to take intense outpatients. But that's also a direction I want to move in the future as a step down and perhaps even as a standalone for what we do. But we have primarily the intensive outpatient and partial care at the moment.
Well, tell her I was asking for her because I remember talking to her quite a bit that day.
Yeah, she's great.
And you were there, and you just sat there and looked at me.
We looked
back and forth, and she did most of the talking. So
all of our staff, but Lori has a wealth of experience, and she's worked in a director position at a similar agency, which is actually how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, a very dedicated and ethical and warm professional.
Right.
So she's very invested in seeing the center grow, even as she's had to step back.
Now, how do you get your clients? I mean, are they recommended from other organizations or from hospitals or all the above? Or
no, it is all of the above. I mean, some of it's just online or through word of mouth and kind of quote-unquote presence of being visibly available to them online. But a lot of it, I believe, is going to come from, as we grow, the hospitals and other providers.
Okay.
So therapists who are seeing that their patients are not improving, or other psychiatrists who are seeing that their parents are kind of stagnating in their improvement, might benefit from a higher level of care at this point. They might think of us. The hospitals as a step down. I've had a good number of patients who've come to my private practice, or I've gotten calls in my private practice requesting an outpatient session, and the patient is just leaving the hospital. And I'm a little bit taken aback by that, because in my training it seemed logical that from a hospital you should step down to a partial care and then intensive outpatient and then go to, back to your doctor or find a new doctor and a therapist. I've had folks that have called looking for immediate outpatient kind of medication management without any programs in between. I think that's something where we can do a better job, hopefully, of reaching out to hospitals and advising them that we're in the area. I mean, there are other programs that are right. similar, but in Monroe, there's nothing around for at least 10 or 12 miles, I think, in a radius.
Mm-hmm.
And we're accessible off the turnpike and from here off of kind of Route 1 and getting here from 95. But for local folks, we're off of 33, 130, the turnpike.
Right.
So we're pretty accessible and we're pretty centralized. But I don't know if those folks just did not want to do a program or the hospital didn't recommend a program from what they're telling me. But I think a step down from a hospital is a very valuable transition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that, you know, if you're in a hospital, say, for whatever, whether it's a private hospital, a state hospital, whatever, if you're in a state hospital, usually it's for a longer period of time than, right. you know, a private hospital. But either one, when you're released from there, it has to be something, you know, not just, okay, see ya, you know, you're on your own. Yeah. That doesn't work because yeah. that's when you have relapses and people go back and, you know, and over again. So, yeah, there has to be something when you get out
right.
of the hospital. And it's not just, you know, a two-day prescription and, you know, see us in 6 weeks, right. you know, because that's not going to, as you well know, mm-hmm. You know, probably more so than I, that doesn't happen. You know, right. I think you're just asking the person to crash.
I think the phrase that, well, you may have heard me say it before. I think I said it here actually last time was when you're in a hospital or a rehab, if it comes to substance abuse, you're in that bubble. You're picked up and kind of isolated from mm-hmm. the real world stressors for a little mm-hmm. while. And then you go back to home and family and job and kids or whatever's going right. on. And you're kind of, if you're not going through a program, my belief is you're in potentially for a free fall because you had all the support for all these days and
right.
hours on upon hours every day, maybe weeks on end sometimes. And now you're supposed to go see a therapist once a week. And not to, you know, speak ill of what therapists are doing in the community.
No,
they're doing
absolutely.
An amazing job. Right. But it's a lot. It's a heavy lift to say, okay, I'm going to go from the hospital 24/7 to 1 hour a week with a therapist, and that'll be enough.
And now you probably have your triggers that maybe you didn't have in the hospital too. You immediately go back to those people, places, and things that are going to trigger your.
Absolutely, yeah. The symptoms or the cravings or in that you know in that yeah. kind of situation with substance abuse. And again. And I see it with teens, too. We have the teen IOP that runs after school 3 days a week, and we'll eventually have partial care, you know, for that as well. Interesting anecdote from a state perspective. Anything above a couple hours is all considered partial care for the license, but we would like to actually have a proper partial right. care similar to the right. adults. And I think in due time we'll have that, hopefully by the end of this year, probably into the next academic year, given that we're winding down this academic year and then during the summer. People are traveling and things of that
mm-hmm.
nature, but
right.
I digress. So, but even with the teens, I have those kids call me or the parents call me and say, my kid was just in the hospital for a week and they told us to find a psychiatrist. I'm like, what about the transition between the hospital and seeing a psychiatrist? They just gave us your number, Dr. Singh, we don't know. And so people aren't, unfortunately, it seems educated right. about the option to step down.
Right.
Perhaps they would take advantage of that and perhaps we have to do a better job educating folks, which is part of the reason I like to come mm-hmm. on and talk about the levels of
sure.
care, whether you come to Center for Wellness in Monroe or there's other programs that are closer to you for those that are listening. You know, if you're coming out of a hospital or the other side of the coin, which we haven't talked about, is when I talked about the therapists helping their patients and suggesting a higher level if they're really struggling, it could be a preventative measure
Absolutely.
To prevent the hospitalization.
Sure.
If you're decompensating with depression
right.
or thoughts of self-harm or
right.
significant panic attacks, you don't want to end up in the hospital because, heaven forbid, you attempted something.
Mm-hmm.
You want to try to
right.
address
prevent
that earlier
that before.
And prevent
right.
that. So that's where these programs can be of value as
right.
well. So we have, from both ends, kind of that middle ground hopefully covered
right.
with IOP and partial care.
Well, we have a few questions yet, but I have to take a break.
Sure.
You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9800. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and co-host is Tracy Ivey. And we're very privileged to have with us, I'm just going to go Dr. Singh, if you don't mind. You can say your first name because I'll murder it.
Gagandeep Singh, yeah. Thank you.
Gagandeep?
Gagandeep.
Gagandeep Singh. I might have to try to remember that.
It's phonetic once you look at it, but it's looks phonetical. Discombobulating when you spell those letters. It's phonetic when you look at it.
Yeah. And Dr. Singh is the executive director of the Center for Wellness. And the center is the goal of the center is to be a premier provider of substance abuse and mental health treatment services on an intensive outpatient basis. During the break, you and I were talking, and if you could explain just the difference between the levels of care available for mental health and substance abuse or alcoholism or whatever.
Sure, and we talked a little bit about partial care earlier, mm-hmm. and that's something that is also something we provide. So the partial care, as I mentioned, is that 5 days a week, more intensive program, 25 hours of group therapy, and intermingled in that individual sessions and sessions with a psychiatrist weekly. IOP is 9 hours a week with less frequent individual sessions and every other week with a psychiatrist. Those are the levels that we have for mental health primary and dual diagnosis for adults at the moment. We plan to have that partial care for teens for mental health primary and dual diagnosis in the not-too-distant future. And we have IOP for the teens, which is after school 3 days a week,
right.
3 hours a day. For the substance abuse side, we've actually not started up a partial care program for that. We've been focused on the intensive outpatient. And to be quite frank, it waxes and wanes. Sometimes there's a staffing issue with that, and sometimes it's just folks coming in or not coming in based on referrals. It's always Murphy's Law. When you start focusing on the mental health aspect and ramping up there,
right.
you start getting calls for substance abuse and vice versa. So we're righting the ship in that regard.
Do you find that a lot of your clients have both?
Absolutely.
A mental health issue and substance abuse?
So with our substance abuse, that's a great question, because with our substance abuse IOP license, we actually have a designation on there because of the level of the staffing that I've tried to maintain always has been licensed counselors, along with perhaps a CADC or an LCADC, but having that licensed mental health counselor that can do both allows us to provide co-occurring treatment.
Okay.
So it would still be primary substance abuse. Right. I wouldn't really, you know, one of the things I saw that I was a little bit concerned about in other places was putting a square peg into a round hole kind of thing. If somebody's got primary substance, but there's not a substance program that fits their timeline or their availability, you try to put them in the mental health so they can at least attend the program. That means you're putting that diagnosis as primary, you're putting the substance as secondary, but really the substance is primary. I don't think that's the way to go about doing things. So we are trying to be pretty purist mm-hmm. about what's primary and what's secondary. That being said, sometimes it's 50-50 or barely 55, right. 45. So it's not that big of a deal if they go one program versus the other. But I do believe the mental health programs do have that secondary component of substance abuse as well. And as we grow, we are likely to start splitting the tracks into a dual diagnosis and a non-dual diagnosis track okay. for the mental health. With the substance abuse, it'll be primary substance abuse, and I think that'll be a commingled track. Again, we don't have the partial care. We have the IOP for substance, which is an evening program. And what I found in my personal experience, unfortunately, again, this might be just my limited experience, but I saw in other agencies when folks were struggling at IOP level, they bumped them up to partial care. They got clean for a week or 2 weeks, then they stepped them back down to IOP, and then a few weeks later they were going back to partial care because they relapsed again. And to me, that said that the patient needs more than outpatient. The patient would benefit from a rehab at this point. The patient needs a little bit more support than what we can do the way that we're trying to do right. it right now. So I didn't believe that that revolving door was beneficial. I felt that the partial care was a way to keep the patient in a program that was more serving the business than the patient. So I never personally saw a significant benefit to the partial care. And so I've personally just focused on having the IOP for substance abuse, not a partial care. Now, I'm sure we can find examples where partial care made a big difference. I just didn't happen to see it in that setting.
Right.
With the mental health, I have seen a significant impact of partial care versus IOP. That I do see substantial change from one to the other when people have to step up to partial care because they're not doing as well as they can in IOP. So the mental health has those two levels. The substance abuse has the IOP level. The mental health has it for both adults and teens, for the IOP, and eventually the teens will have partial care as well. Outside of the agency, higher levels include hospitalizations for mental health or detox or rehab for substance abuse.
Okay. Primary. The counseling sessions, who runs them?
We have licensed counselors who run those. So my sessions with the patients are primarily focused on medication management and if you'll forgive me, I'll go off on a bit of a tangent.
Go ahead.
My approach to seeing patients is not focused more strictly on medication. I'm very much focused on the whole, and I try to bring in therapy. I use some cognitive behavioral techniques in my sessions. In my private practice, I am a little bit more at liberty to do so because I have a longer amount of time with mm-hmm. the patients. And my schedule is set up accordingly with the IOP or partial care. I've got to get a certain number of people in based on the size of the program. But I do try to bring in cognitive behavioral approaches and supportive psychotherapy. And in fact, I recently did this talk a couple times and I'm going to do a similar talk again. I spoke about cognitive behavioral therapy for adolescents with anxiety specifically because okay. being a child adolescent specialist, not turning just to medication as the only option seemed to be a little bit surprising to some folks when right. they talked to me as a psychiatrist. But I really do believe the medication is a part of it, but not all of it. And in my opinion, the therapy is in large part as important, if not more important, than getting the medication exactly correct, although that's a big factor. So the therapists run those individual sessions, and I do my part during my quote-unquote mm-hmm. med management sessions to reinforce the therapy. But I am focused on the medication in the IOP and partial care.
Do you find that sometimes, I don't know how to say this, do you find sometimes that medication doesn't work for certain individuals and other things do? The reason I ask is because there's a young woman, anybody's young compared to my age, but a young woman who is in California mm-hmm. who has called a couple times on the show, and she suffers from bipolar and depression, and she says she doesn't take meds. So I asked her what she does, and she says she runs, and she does holistic things. I says, well, is it working? And she says, yeah. I said, well, keep it up. She said, well, you're not going to tell me to. I said, first of all, I'm not a doctor. Second of all, if it's working, why would you want to change it? Right. You know, I mean, it's just like anything else. I mean, you know, you don't want to change if it's working.
Right.
So I says, just think that somewhere maybe down the road you may have to add a medication to it, but right now it's working. God bless you. Keep going, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just curious if you find that, not so much maybe with substance abuse or whatever, but with mental health, if you find out that sometimes medication don't work for an individual, but something else does.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, you made the example, I believe you said she has bipolar disorder.
Right, right.
So with that, you know, looking at my allopathic training and being an MD in the U.S., looking at the data and the research, the argument is that you should have a mood stabilizer on board to prevent further episodes. However, I do believe very strongly that the other modalities can be, like I said, as beneficial, if not more so, than medication. And you're right, she might end up on medication down the road, but if she's doing okay right now, I may not rock the boat. I find more with depression and anxiety, unipolar depression, not bipolar depression, more with depression and anxiety that I can lean more heavily on non-medicinal options. When it comes to psychotic processes or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, I might have to lean a little bit more heavily on the medication. But a lot of what I talk about with depression is something called behavioral activation, which means, you know, I call it fake it till you make it. So things that were of interest to you, things that you used to enjoy to do, that you feel like that depression has kind of snuffed out that spark and that interest, you want to get that back. You're going to have to kind of go through the motions for a little while, make yourself run again, try to read again, paint, cook, bake, whatever
it is,
do, crochet, which is a big thing people love. Do that until you actually start gaining something from it that's more than just kind of going through a chore. So we spend time, and I talk about that in my sessions at Center for Wellness, but even more importantly, the therapists talk about coping skills and modalities. Because again, if they're seeing me, and I put it this way to a lot of patients when they're coming in, you're going to see me once every couple weeks for IOP, maybe every week for partial. The medication is going to work in the background, but what are you really here for? You're here for the groups. You're here for those 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for partial of getting intensive knowledge about how to handle this. That means coping skills. That means education.
Right.
That means practicing this stuff on your own. You know, I've had folks that have had success in our IOP already telling me, because we're relatively new as an IOP, we really just got the adults going late fall or around holidays, actually, more around the holidays. And, you know, we've had a few successful discharges already, and they've told me what they've taken home is the worksheets from the groups and the modalities that they learn from the therapists. So absolutely, therapy can be as important, if not more so, than the medication. But I use this, and I use this in my talk that I just gave. You know, I threw up a picture of a basketball player who really messed up his ankle really bad. You could tell it's clearly broken. And I said, okay, so what do you do here, right? You can approach this from both angles, using it to speak about the importance of medication or therapy. And I tell folks, yeah, he's going to have to put a cast on there, maybe get some surgery, maybe put a rod in there. But then after that, he's going to have to rehab that thing to be able to walk again the way he needs to walk.
Right.
So to me, the therapy is like the rehab. So for those who think, as a psychiatrist, don't you think medicine's the answer? Well, no, because without the rehab, he wouldn't have the use of his ankle like he would have before he broke it. And then I flip it around when those folks who are resistant to medication and I really feel they need it, I say, well, he did start with a cast. Sometimes you need to set that thing right before the therapy works. You can't just start running on a broken ankle either. So you got to look at both sides and see where you need to come at this from. But in almost, I always tell my patients, especially in my private practice, when they even are on the phone with me and kind of checking me out as a doctor if they want to come in or not on the phone, I say, listen, you're going to walk in the door. I can almost guarantee you you're going to walk out of the door with a recommendation for individual counseling or more in terms of IOP or something like that, depending on what you need. I can't promise you you're going to walk out of the door with a recommendation for medication as a doc. It's a likelihood. If you're coming to me from a therapist or a hospital, yeah, it's likely because you're struggling right now. But I can guarantee you therapy is going to be a recommendation that I'm going to make. And that's why my sessions are half an hour in my private practice, so that I can do therapy, not just do a 10-minute med check. You know, my sessions involve a lot of other modalities. I talk about, we do this in IOP and partial care, but I personally, even as the med management guy in the IOP and Center for Wellness, I've talked about mindfulness, distress tolerance, grounding techniques, things of that nature that we do, and exercises that we do that could help them. So the short answer would be there's definitely a lot of options aside from medication sometimes for people.
Now, for substance abuse, do you use medication in that at all?
So I am a Suboxone, certified Suboxone prescriber. I found that a lot of times on the outpatient side, that's become something that folks just unfortunately get paid cash and just keep re-upping it. To me, I try to taper people as quick as possible if I can, especially if they're in IOP. I say, you've got as much support as you're going to get here short of a rehab. This is the time to try to backtrack off of that stuff if you can. So I do use medication in that regard. And, of course, I'll use medication if I think we're unearthing some underlying depression or anxiety that right. meets the criteria for medication.
Right.
But as a standard rule, I don't try to use medication
no.
in the IOP
and
if we don't have to.
Sure. What is Suboxone? Could you?
Suboxone is a buprenorphine-naloxone combination. So buprenorphine is an opiate. Basically, it's a blocker of the cravings
okay.
for opiates and
okay.
other substances. And then naloxone prevents potential overdose or abuse of it.
Right, right.
So it's a combination pill. Subutex is the blocker without that mm-hmm. That safeguard.
Is methadone still used? Or?
It's used, but more in more of a clinic setting.
Okay.
Not so much, at least not at Center for Wellness, is not something that we do.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of strict oversight and regulations mm-hmm. about methadone, rightfully so. And so folks I've seen have gone daily to go get a methadone dose, get observed that they're taking it, and then go about their day and do that until they can take home a supply for the weekend. And clinics like that operate very differently
right.
than what we do.
Right, right, right. But if you're blocking the cravings through the Suboxone, how do they get over that hurdle then?
Right, so what you're trying to do is help them work on the triggers, the people, places, and things.
Okay.
Bring in some 12-step, not that we necessarily do a meeting, but we actually
right.
bring in some of those concepts as well, and helping them learn, most importantly, as you said earlier, kind of what the triggers are, the people, places, and things. Why
right.
were you using? Yes, you have less cravings right now, and we're kind of modulating that for you, but eventually you have to recognize what's going to lead you in that direction to stop it on your own, and that's the work that we try to do in the substance abuse world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, your private practice,
yes,
as opposed to the wellness.
Yes.
Are your techniques the same, or
so in my private practice, I'm
vary a little bit, or
they vary a little bit, in the, only because of the time constraint. So,
okay.
My personal approach is still very much the same. If you sometimes I look at my notes that I'm typing, and I have to catch myself and say, I barely wrote down much about the medicine. I wrote a lot about what's going on in the family and how they're coping and what skills we talked about, and I wrote two sentences about them tolerating the medication. So. Am I doing enough about the medication? But if it's okay, you know, you don't have to write too much about it. And that kind of reminds me that even – I saw this morning when I was at the center – that even at the center, I am trying to bring in those other aspects that is not just a med check. But granted, at the center, I might have 10 or 15 minutes to see a patient. In my private practice, my sessions are 30 minutes
mm-hmm.
set. So I have a lot of time relative to most doctors to be able to see folks. And they're two separate – just in fairness to clarify for the listeners, they're two separate entities. So if you go to the center and you see me as the doctor there, when you discharge, you don't have to see me.
Right.
And I've kept it that way very purposefully. And if you're seeing me for private practice, you don't have to use our IOP. If you end up going to an IOP, you have that option, obviously, to go to any
right.
IOP, including ours, but you don't have to do that. So I've tried to keep them very separate for that reason, to avoid kind of the ethical crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And so the private practice is out of network. That is something that's considered fee for service, but I provide a receipt so patients can be reimbursed through the insurance if they have out of network
right.
benefits. So that's
right.
how the private practice works separately. The center, we build the insurance for you, and we're in network with those three or four big
mm-hmm.
ones and trying to get more.
Right. You have, I would imagine, some clients who families get involved, and some who do not have families who get involved, or families just wash their hands of them because they've fell so many times and they just don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
When the families want to get involved, how do you bring the families in to be involved?
So at the center, as I mentioned, we do offer family sessions. So
right.
we have to obviously get authorizations and releases and signatures that we can talk to the family for the patient. But then we ask the patient if they'd be willing to have the family come in, and then we try to set up a meeting with our therapist. So each one thing I failed to mention was that at the center, you have right now have three therapists that are running, actually four if we include our director who runs some groups as well. So four therapists sharing the group responsibilities, but each patient is assigned to one primary therapist. So they'll see all the therapists throughout their stay, but they have one primary who does their individual sessions and who also runs their family sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So that individual therapist will make a plan, and we make a formal treatment plan with each patient about what we want to work on, including family dynamic issues. And again, these are all regulated by the state, but it's just good practice to do it.
Right.
And so we offer and suggest family sessions. You know, I have a young woman who I'm seeing right now who has, I've diagnosed her with PTSD. It's not your traditional type of trauma. It's more based on some family issues and some diagnoses that were shared, you know, some mental health issues in the family that led to some traumatic experiences for this young person. So she is a little bit concerned about doing family sessions because she doesn't necessarily want to reveal that that was the reason for her trauma, or at least what she is experiencing as trauma.
Sure.
So that'll be something that we'll have to navigate, but we're trying to urge her to at least start opening up in groups about it and lay the groundwork for the family. But again, sometimes you're right. Family washes their hands, and especially with the adults, you can only involve family if they want them involved.
Right.
With the teens, you have a little bit more oversight and the family can be involved. But even with the teens, there's confidentiality and certain things we don't discuss unless it's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I have a quick question before we have to take a break. Now, you mentioned grounding. Does that mean people walking barefoot on the ground, or what does that mean?
So there's something that I've been looking more and more at. There's something called dialectical behavior therapy, and that was designed by Marshall Linehan for borderline personality disorder. But we've seen it used for bipolar disorder a lot. And it's more and more being used for depression and anxiety. And I've seen it to be, at least what I say, that we are not a DBT program, because what Linehan designed was very specific as to how you do it. You have 24/7 phone coaching and individual and group sessions, and you don't do any sort of processing. It's all about skills, so you don't really get to process, which is not what we do. We definitely allow for processing at our program and think that's beneficial to people. But we do kind of DBT-informed or DBT-light work. We take the concepts at least and use it. And one of them, the idea of mindfulness, and being able to be kind of aware on purpose of what's going on right now without judgment. That's kind of a synopsis of what mindfulness is.
Right.
And so to do that, I tell folks, again, with the anxiety talk, because it's kind of fresh in my mind, I talk to folks, there's a 5-4-3-2-1 technique that I talk about, where you'll sit there, and as you're getting anxious or upset or uncomfortable, your mind is wandering off to something else. It's not in the moment. And if it's not in the moment, you're not being mindful. So to be mindful, you want to ground yourself to what reality is. And what's reality? It's what you can physically perceive. So use your senses. Five things you can see. Right now, stop. Start naming five things and describing five things that you can see. Four things that you can physically touch. Start describing what you feel when you touch those four different textures. Three things that you can hear. Two things you can smell. One thing you can taste. Right now, in the moment, don't think about what's in your mind that's distracting you. Pull yourself back to reality and right now.
Right.
And so that'll ground you to the moment. That's kind of the idea behind grounding, or at least one example.
That's really interesting. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Be right back.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness.
We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
This is Tracy Ivey of Mental Health Matters, and we're here with Dr. Singh, the owner and executive director of the Center of Wellness in Monroe, New Jersey. Welcome back again, Dr. Singh. You mentioned something on the break about realizing your dream. Tell me right now, how many people do you have in your center?
So right now we're kind of just getting going. I think in our day program, and this is something else that sets us apart a little bit, I think we should be a little bit larger than this for the full benefit of the groups. But we have a little bit over a handful, six or seven folks in the day program for IOP, and we're looking forward to starting the partial care program once the referrals start getting going. And then for the teen, we have less than that. I think we have three or four kids in the teen program right now. Some of the larger agencies might have 15, 20 people, sometimes upwards of that, in a group, which can be a little bit more daunting. We're hoping to not get that overwhelming in terms of group size, but I think a little bit larger. I think having 10 to 12 in a group would be kind of more in the ideal range. And we're excited, and you mentioned the dream, which is what I was rambling on about during the break, but you know, when I came out of my training, I went into a position at a similar agency as to what I've started now. And I just saw what it did to help people, and I realized there wasn't a whole lot where I was located geographically in the Monroe area, and I actually live in town. So it's, you know, southern Middlesex County. Monmouth and Mercer are fairly well served if you're, you know, flanking us on east-west, but not a whole lot in the southern Middlesex County range. And then you go a little bit south and you're in Burlington, there's not a lot there.
Right.
And the north-northwest corner of Ocean, there's not a lot there, and we're not too far from there. So I felt that bringing something like where I worked before to that area would be beneficial, and that was really my dream, to kind of start up an agency that I knew, hopefully, knock on wood, we stay on the right ethical track and are doing it for the patients, doing the right thing, and as a doc, I can feel fulfilled in what I'm doing and have that sense of accomplishment of helping people and be successful in bringing something that's needed to the area, in my opinion, without feeling that kind of tug of war
right.
between clinical
right.
and meeting the administrative needs of an agency.
Right. So right now they're getting a lot of personal attention with these small
They are. They
groups.
Are getting a lot of attention. Maybe too much attention at times. But I spoke to a teen about this last week, and I said, you know, I know it's a small group, and I hope it's not too much attention. And they actually had been in a previous program, and they had done more strictly DBT, as I was mentioning earlier, where you don't get to process. It's just
right.
learn this skill, and let's not get too much into it in terms of process, because there's some concerns with that, which is a fair point from a DBT perspective. So she said she loved the fact that she could actually open up and talk right. and have time to process right. and have mm-hmm. that much attention.
Right.
And in some ways, you know, you get more than you pay for when it's a small group because you're getting a near individual session
sure.
For a long period of time
sure.
Every day versus a large group that you're kind of blending into the wall. And we don't want to ever get to a point where people can blend into the wall too much.
Right. Are you also in an area of, at least of New Jersey, where there's a high opioid problem? I was under the impression southern New Jersey.
There is. I mean, Monmouth and Ocean, I think, unfortunately, take the cake with that epidemic at the moment. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of movement politically and culturally around that right now, as I'm sure people are aware of. And we, you know, that's where I've been somewhat taken aback. And I think I talked a little bit more about the substance abuse last time because we weren't doing the mental health yet.
Right.
And the mental health has been my dream, so I've talked more about that. But from a substance abuse standpoint, there has been this waxing and waning of referrals, which is a little bit surprising considering the large need that's out there. The seeking of treatment is not as proportionate to the need that's out there, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get the word out there that we have that program. And that's something else where I'm looking at shoring up some staffing there once we get past the next few weeks of some state reviews that we have coming up and things of that nature and just settling the partial care for the mental health. I want to kind of shore up the substance abuse program and reinvigorate that too and go out there to community and talk about that as well because I feel that's a huge need in the area too.
Right. All right. If someone wanted some more information or how would they do that? Telephone, Facebook, website?
Yeah, so we have a few different, and I can give you, we're on Twitter.
Okay. Okay.
And Facebook, but really, realistically speaking, the website is probably the best. Website is www.centerforwellnessnj, for New Jersey, centerforwellnessnj.com. And if you click there, we have a pop-up window that has a live chat with kind of a, computer software that can answer some questions for you, and you can leave some information mm-hmm. for us there. You can send us an email from there, or you can obviously just give us a call with the phone number. The phone number is 732-655-4CFW, which is 4239. So 732-655-4239. So it's centerforwellnessnj.com or that phone number. And then you also have on Facebook, if you wanted to find us, we're at facebook.com/CFWNJ. That's our Facebook page, and it'll have some media and some information about what we've been doing and some of the events we attend and things of that nature. So that's for the Center for Wellness. And again, what would happen is either the individual or the hospital would reach out and say that they wanted to learn more about the programs or maybe start a program. My staff would take down their information, including the insurance information, check all that stuff out for them, and then set up an appointment. You would come in for an assessment, and if you're deemed appropriate, then you'd start mm-hmm. partial care IOP based on that. So there's some criteria that we look for, but we haven't had anybody who's come in so far that's looking for IOP that doesn't meet criteria.
Right.
Partial care is a little
right.
bit more strict criteria. But I do think when you're coming to a program like this, if you're having panic attacks or thoughts of self-harm or, heaven forbid, something like that, it makes sense to start in the partial care
sure.
for a week, 2 weeks even, not maybe a whole lot of time, and then step down to IOP. And that's going to be the paradigm that we're going to move towards, is that unless someone is kind of really on the fence about the program and doesn't have the ability to commit that much and doesn't feel it's that severe, and if my therapists, clinicians meet with them and agree that that's appropriate, then they might start just at IOP. But for mental health, I'd like them to start at partial once we are
right.
getting some referrals
right.
there.
What about your private practice? If somebody wanted to reach out to your private practice.
Sure. So my private practice, I'm out of Freehold. I also see folks out of the Center for Wellness location in Monroe, but I'm in Freehold, which was the first office. And that's 609-245-8550. And the website is www. It's my first initial, my last name, and my degree. So it's gsingmd.com. G is in George, S for Sam, I for India, N for Nancy, G for George, H for Henry, M for Michael, D for David.com. And again, 609-245-8550. If you go to the website, you can do an appointment request for my private practice. I may or may not have the appointment open, but I'll get back to you with all the information about how to set up an appointment. I do email and or have a phone conversation with folks before they come into private practice to make sure that what they're looking for is something I can help them with. and that they're aware of the out-of-network and all that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to blindside mm-hmm. anybody with anything. Right. So I send an email with all that info right. up front. And so I like to be in touch with folks before they come in.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come up here. And trust me, Dr. Singh, you will, because I'll have you back.
Well, I appreciate
you, you will come back. I guarantee it. And, you know, if you could just give the phone numbers again for yours and the center.
Yeah. Center for Wellness, 732-655-4239. And my practice is 609-245-8550.
Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it. And remember,
thank
folks, we'll be here next week, same time, same station. And mental health really does matter.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. The Federal Trade Commission has opened an investigation into Facebook over the use of user data by a political outfit. Pep Boys has suspended its Facebook ads. Cook County, Illinois has filed a lawsuit against the social network. CNET's Dan Ackerman.
This may be the case that finally gets some of these companies to re-examine how freely they've been helping themselves to your information.
The U.S. has taken action against Russia, expelling 60 diplomats over the poisoning of an ex-spy in Britain. Moscow has denied involvement. The Russians will be given 7 days to leave the U.S. Administration officials described them as Russian intelligence officers who were hiding their real motive under the cloak of diplomacy. Canada and more than a dozen European nations are taking similar actions. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Life needs to be enjoyed with family and friends, to laugh and to share. But tragically, addiction to alcohol and drugs can ruin that. So, if drugs and alcohol are a problem in your life or the life of someone you care about, then isn't it time to make a change? The Watershed Addiction Treatment Programs have been offering life-changing results since 1998. The Watershed has successfully treated and helped over 50,000 people get their lives back. So if you're ready to make your change and be free from addiction to alcohol and drugs, then it is time for you to make a change. The Watershed knows how to help you recover and promises to help you begin your change. Your new life can begin right now with just one simple text on your mobile phone. Text the word RECOVER to 474747. That's the word RECOVER to 474747. And a caring Watershed treatment professional will help you make your change. Do it now. Just text the word RECOVER to 474747 or visit us at thewatershed.com.
Four people are dead after a bomb explodes. USA's John DeMaster reports.
A suicide car bomb explodes outside the Somali parliament in the capital city of Mogadishu, killing four people, including the bomber. While no group has yet to claim responsibility, the Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist organization Al-Shabaab has been responsible for multiple attacks throughout Somalia and Kenya in recent years. Al-Shabaab frequently using bombings in its attack. This is the third bombing in 4 days in the area. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
A new attack are threatening Yazidis in Iraq. Jennifer Breeden has more.
Turkey announces a new military campaign in the Shingal region of Iraq, where the genocide victim Yazidi people have been residing. Yazidis, a religious minority of ethnic Kurds, have been victims of a genocidal campaign by ISIS for the past several years, with many of its young women kidnapped and held as sex slaves. Turkey's military campaign coming on the heels of another campaign to wipe out the Kurdish population in the Syrian city of Afrin. I'm Jennifer Breeden.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaroot. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a one-ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
A new study out is suggesting exercising less than 20 minutes a day is linked to a shorter lifespan. With details, here's USA's Chris Barnes.
Researchers with the Duke University